You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening. We are the Real Short Box. My name is Donald. I'm here with the ever-stable Kevin, the ever-unstable Chris, and the not-quite-stable Tracy. Thanks for joining, Tracy.
You're welcome. Good to...
Wow.
Yeah, wow is right. She's like, I'm going to murder you.
And she is. When she sees you on Wednesday, she's going to kill you.
Yeah.
I'm going to help her.
Poison in the food.
You're in another state. You can't help anybody, Chris. You're all alone over there.
Hey, there's airplanes.
In the woods.
There's airplanes and there's mail.
And there's trains. Oh my God. Are you threatening him Unabomber style, sir?
Oh. Uh-oh. I didn't catch that.
Anthrax.
That's a band.
Oh, wow.
He's threatening to have them play. I don't mind it so much, you know. Wow, what are we... Okay, so I think we're talking about, like, death of comics. We're talking about dead comics, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about mm-hmm. the industry and, like, how sad it's been lately. And as somebody that's an avid comic book fan, several of us that are avid comic book fans, and three out of the four of us being affiliated with shops in the industry... We have noticed sales difference. We have noticed the mentality shift in the sense, like pre-pandemic, we were on a gravy train with biscuit wheels. Marvel was clicking along. The films were still doing well. The quality was still there. People were enjoying it. DC was still clunking along, trying. And we're like, ha ha, we'll let you try one more time, DC. One more time. And we just felt different about the community of comic books. And then the pandemic happened. And I think what happened with the pandemic, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we got a lot of speculators with money.
Oh, yes.
Like they had a lot of time on their hands. They were working from home, if working at all.
Got the pandemic money from the government.
They got those stimulus checks, those fat stimulus checks that came in that they didn't realize they had to pay back on their taxes. And they had nothing to do. So what happened, and for example, We Can Be Heroes in Chatsworth, California, they had just opened at the onset of the pandemic. Basically, the pandemic happened about 3 or 4 months after that shop had opened. So they had to quickly pivot into an online environment, to where they could sell books online on like Instagram and things like that in order to survive. Yeah. And it became a very friendly showmanship kind of environment where everybody had their different quirks and their different personalities, and you chose what personality you liked and at the prices you liked them selling it. And that's what you stuck with. And occasionally there would be more than one. Some people would have, they were whores. They'd have like 7 or 8, you know, people like that that they would watch and buy from and stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, if the variety's there and the showmanship is there, and that's what they enjoyed doing. But I feel like after the pandemic, I don't think people knew what to do. And those that had invested and speculated suddenly felt cheated, or felt that there was no real investment point or purpose to it any longer, and they gave up. And I feel that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of people giving up, and we're thinking that it's possible that the comic book community could be shrinking, wherein it could also just be that there's just a lot of people, there's a mass exodus due to the influx that we had during the pandemic. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it, because I just started actually collecting comics in 2021. So it was after all of this kind of happened, but it was at the tail end of the big boom. So when I started, I was seeing books that were going for like crazy amounts of money. And I was like, I could never be a collector because it's so expensive. But then everything kind of fell hard. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of was like, oh, okay, now I can like actually collect. which is what I started doing. But I feel as though, yeah, it was the fluctuation in price that all of a sudden people are like, I don't want to do it anymore. And there's not enough, like you said, there's not enough profit in it for people to keep doing it. And then now it's just still left with people that actually read comic books.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of that, there's a lot of, thankfully, there's still a lot of readers, but I feel like that's even, like, they're not, I don't think they're adding in the fact that people are reading digitally.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so easy via dubious means to acquire a digital print of something, like a comic or a book, a novel, anything like that. Somebody could have even just scanned the pages and put it up, and then people can just read it for free. So it makes it much easier, even so, more so than film, to pirate and to display. And I think that hurts the community. But I also understand that when you're reading a 20 to 24 page comic book, you don't want to spend $5-6, you know, sometimes even $7, depending on the company.
You go to gasoline.
Yes, you don't want to spend that much, particularly if it mixes in with the economy. Yeah,
I mean, I use digital, but I buy them for one reason, because I can blow up the picture and I can see it better and read it better. Because sometimes it has really small text and I can't read it okay. unless I do this. So if I'm going to buy
a comic, right in front of your face, yeah.
So if I'm going to buy a comic, I'll buy the digital version just because I can zoom in and I can zoom in on just that frame and see that whole artwork and read what they're saying.
Right. Well, here's another thing, dude, too, that people don't take into account is the library. The library, there's actually apps that you can use that's connected to the library where you can rent comic books. You can rent graphic novels. And I've done this many, many, many times. In fact, Chris, on our trip to Thailand, I was reading Darth Vader. I was reading the Vader Down story on my tablet while we were hanging out by the pool and having, watermelon smoothies. I'm over there reading Vader in comic book form, because in a particular way, this app in particular, and you're talking about the zooming thing, and they created this technology to allow each panel to kind of shift. So it would move from left to right, or it would come in from the bottom and push the other panel out of the way. It became this its own action sequence by watching it move from one panel to the next. It became dynamic. It became interesting. And that, to me, is when digital, I saw the idea, the true identity of digital, what they really wanted to do with it. And I said, oh shit, this is good. And I don't blame people for reading it that way. It's just when you can get things for free, you don't oftentimes feel, and if you're a reader, you don't oftentimes feel it's necessary to collect. You need that sweet spot of a collector and a reader. You need the ones that want the book because of the story, but they want the book because it's a collectible, because of the cover, or because of the artist or the writer, or whatever the premise of it appeals to you. We're seeing a lot of hype on some small indie books now because of that reason, because there's a story behind it, but also the artwork's unique. And, you know, it's from a different company that doesn't produce a lot of books. So you get small print runs, which I think we've run into now for the past at least 4 or 5 years. We've run into these smaller print runs that have shrunk significantly. So, you know, even like, for example, Ultimate Fallout didn't have the hugest print run when you're comparing it to a book that came out like an image book in the 90s, you know, that was printing like a million copies or something. It's insane how many books was being printed in the 90s. That's why a lot of books from the 90s are still recognized as unvaluable or practically worthless. Try to sell 90s Superman comics. Go ahead. I dare you.
Good luck.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've bought comics and then gone and read bootleg versions of them so I wouldn't have to open the comics because I wanted to save them. But I still bought them. So it's not like I'm not buying them.
Well, yeah. I mean, even like, the interesting thing is like Marvel and DC and stuff, they had a digital code. And it was like, so if you don't want to thumb through your book entirely to read it that way, you can just scratch off or peel off this digital code. And I think it's mostly a peel. The only problem with that is they're associating that with the same thing that they did with a Marvel value stamp. It's like almost like instead of cutting out the stamp, you've peeled off the digital code, making it less appealing because it's not in its original form. It's not in the original state that that comic book was intended to be.
Yeah.
So that's a fascinating part of that as well. So if you decide that you did want to read it digitally, you would then probably buy two, one to own and collect, knowing full well that you shouldn't be peeling off the digital code, and two, just peeling it off and being like, oh, well, if it becomes a huge book later, I can still sell it for some money, you know, even though the digital code is peeled off. And then I have another one that I can make my real money off of, you know. So yeah. I think people need to look at it as we did in the 80s and 90s, as far as like before the boons, anyway, the big boon, is just that there's a niche for it, for comic books. There's a niche for it, and it's finding the right people in that niche. Do you think that we're lacking possibly in story or in art, or do you think that we're in a good spot, and if we're not in a good spot, what can be improved?
All right, so here's my opinion. Who doesn't read a lot of comic books, I pretty much stick to Ninja Turtles, IDW run Ninja Turtles, and all the variations that they're doing with all the crossovers and stuff. But I tried getting into the new X-Men series, and that's the issue, is that you have to read 1,000 different series to follow the story.
Yeah.
And I know they're doing it just to sell all these different all these different comics. So you're like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen next, so I have to go buy this one. I got to buy this one. And you're buying 5 or 6 a week just so you can follow the story. And I think that's the issue. It's that you have all these interconnecting. They're taking the Marvelverse and all these different universes together, putting them together too much. We need to go back to where more of the stories were standalone. And it's why I kind of like the Ninja Turtles, because they do have crossover stuff, but it has nothing to do with the series. Like, you get all these other things, and it's totally, you could read them and they're their own thing, and it doesn't affect the series at all.
Yeah. I think there's an art component to this too. I feel as though, because I go to that Lightbox Expo every year, and I feel as though they were very much into concept art, and then slowly, because that market got saturated, the next kind of like cousin to that would be comic art, because it's very similar in the way it looks. And so I think that there's a weird shift that happened like this past year, where all of a sudden now everyone wants to be a comic book artist and wants to be a cover artist. And so there's a weird shift to art, but I feel like the story sometimes gets lost because they're so focused on getting, you know, the art right or something like that, that they forget to look for the good writer that goes with the good artist. I don't know. That's what I've noticed too. Stories sometimes aren't as good.
Yeah, it's funny when you like look at it, like trailing, like, and following. I've learned to follow writers now. Like, if somebody I like is writing something, it might not necessarily be because I like the character. It could be, you know, I'm sure it's part of it, of course. But why is this an exceptional story? Because of the writer. And say what you want about his personal life or some of his work and stuff, but I think Geoff Johns, in the last probably, 20 years, 15, 20 years, has written some of the best stuff overall, and I think for DC in general. Him, and I think Mark Waid really still is extremely solid. But if you want something dynamic and truly spectacular, I think Geoff Johns is still the way to go. And I still believe it, even, you know, having read recently his, you know, Stargirl and the JSA run and, you know, the stuff that he's still putting out, and it's been putting out for a little while now, it's still fire to me. It's still such good storytelling. The art's fine. You know, and DC's really good about this. And to a point, Marvel is too, having a stable of solid artists that can produce the content quickly and can show you it. You know, they're not breaking the mold. They are just showing you the characters that you know and love in a way that's normal to you. But it's the story that truly makes it exceptional. And I think that Tracy's talking a lot to artists trying to showcase their work. And a lot of times those artists are also the writers. So they take a lot of time on the art and not so much time on the story, where they should do the opposite sometimes. Take a little more time on the story and a little less time on the art, or just take a little longer to put the book out. You know, don't, what is that one, player, what was it, Kevin, that one series from Image? One player, ready player,
player, non-player.
Non-player, yeah. Which took, what, 4 years between issue one,
issue one and issue two? That was ridiculous.
And then they never made another issue after that, if I recall.
Nope.
Yeah. And there was so much heat behind issue one. And unfortunately, they I don't know what happened. I think it was maybe like a health issue or something, possibly. But it just didn't come together for them, and the heat had died, you know? You can't wait that long in between something. It's like putting out Anchorman and then 15 years later putting out Anchorman 2. Or putting out Dumb and Dumber and 20-some years later putting out the sequel to the Dumb and Dumber franchise. Like, yeah. It's dead. Like, you're not going to be able to reclaim that magic. Like, there's no way.
And in this culture, it's all about what you got going on right now.
Yeah.
What have you done for me lately?
And it's extremely rare, like Top Gun and Top Gun 2, like having Top Gun Maverick is an extremely rare thing. I mean, that is a unicorn for that to happen, for them to take that long of a time period off and create something truly spectacular.
Well, Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, to create something that's fun and memorable and still emotes such a powerful emotions from people of happiness and sorrow at the same time, simultaneously, in just one small scene is very, very good job. So, you know, there's some films out there, but yeah, like in storytelling, you need that magic. And we certainly do have some unicorns out there. There's some great stories. But there's also been, and anybody that watches our live shows, on Rumble Pop that we put out almost every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, will know I do a segment there called Donald Pulls Out. And it's just me pulling out books out of a box and reading them and then rating them and explaining them briefly to you on why you should get it or why you should skip it, you know. And I think it's coming across with those. And as anybody knows, when they see that, there's a lot of books that I go through that are just trash. Like, it's just filler. Mm-hmm. And they're so expensive. It's so expensive to buy filler, you know, that you almost don't want to buy the book until the recommendation comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like going to the movies. You don't want to go to the movies until the critic tells you it's good. And now the critic could be anybody. It could be, you know, your next door neighbor. The internet has really changed so many things versus you'd wait for the paper. You know, in the olden days, you'd wait for the paper and for the critiques for the movies. And like waiting for the USA Today movie section, the Purple Life section, and you scroll to the back or something, and the reviews are there about film that's coming out that week or has come out. And that was always exciting. Now you can go anywhere online. You can use your phone. You can go anywhere. And there's somebody telling you it's great. There's somebody telling you it's terrible. And it's such a mixed bag. So it makes it a little harder to pick. So basically, at this point, then you have to pick your favorite critic or your favorite, you know, blogger, and then just follow them and what they like. If you like a lot of it, then follow that and go with that. And I think the indie stuff is good for a fact. Like, there's a guy that comes in and he his name is Jesse, and he picks out every week, all number ones. And I don't think I've ever seen him buy a number two of anything, except for like if it's X-Men related. If it's X-Men related, or I believe Green Lantern or Avengers even, he'll get it. But if it's any other title, it's only number one.
Wow.
And like, there's a lot of amazing books that he's gotten that has number two, three, four, five that he's never bought. That I know of, like to know to finish the story or tell the story. So that, to me, that's a mixed bag. You know, there's emotions of, man, that all these must suck. But then having read a lot of them, I'm like, oh no, a lot of them are actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
what would compel somebody to not want to go further? And I'm thinking it's probably monetarily. Like, you know, it's expensive. So maybe he reads the rest of them digitally, you know, when they come out. You know, maybe he waits for the trades and gets those and saves money that way. You always have to look at your wallet or at your purse when you're looking at what you're collecting. That's a big part of anybody's collection is their income. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the bigger the income or the bigger the ability to save, the better the books you're going to see in somebody's collection. Normally, that should be what should happen. And then, you know, like the lower the income, the more smaller but niche collections you see. And sometimes those collections can be really cool, too.
It's true.
You can get some really great books for super cheap still to this day. And in fact, I believe it's Spiro's Heroes is it a dollar book section?
Yeah, dollar book section.
Yeah, they got a dollar book section. So you can go in there and at any point in time, go through a box and grab a book for a buck. And if it's a number one and they have 1 through 5, $5. And you have 5 issues versus getting one book that has just come out for $5. So you have to look at that too. Where's the value? You can go to flea markets and things like that and get books too. And a lot of people do. So with the market being the way it is, what do you guys think? What do you think could help kind of not necessarily stabilize it, but give an influx to it of meaning, of popularity, of hype behind it? What do you think needs to happen?
I mean, I think, honestly, I think that one of the things that's happening right now is that these popular creators are like leaving the bigger publishing houses and they're forming their own. So Distillery Media, which was founded by the Comixology people that left, along with Jock, Scott Snyder, all of like the big, you know, artists and writers, and they're creating their own books that are creator owned. And they're like 4 issues or something, stories. They're not huge runs. And I think that they're really focusing on quality. So I feel like the more that people focus on the quality of the book, and like Chris was kind of saying, like not having to buy 20 issues to get the story, mm-hmm. 4 issues is the whole story. I think that that might be part of what could help.
And you could do a volume 1. And then do a volume 2, which is the follow-up, the sequel. They're Millaring it, is what I would call it. Mark Millar popularized that in his Millar world, or Miller world, however he pronounces it whenever he's drinking or not drinking, I guess. But that kind of an idea behind it of, you know, small, intimate stories told quickly and efficiently has been doing well for him. Not so much in the film world, I would say, unfortunately, but with the idea behind the books and stuff, there's popularity. There's still heat behind his name, even till this day. And he's been doing it for 20 some years also.
Yeah.
You know.
Also.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, also maybe take some things from the manga industry. You know, once you're done with the story, it's over. You know, there's just finality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody dies, maybe they're just dead.
And yeah, when a story's over, the story is over.
And that's okay. You know, it's okay to have that happen. Like, did Bucky need to come back? No. Are we glad he did? Yes. Are we surprised that we're glad he did? Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of that, you know, that happens in the comic book world. And at the same time, Bucky was coming back, the Red Hood. Like Jason Todd was coming back, and were we excited about it? No, but did we enjoy it? Yes. And are we glad it happened? Absolutely. And are we shocked about that? Yes. So it's the same thing, you know, and around the same time too, DC and Marvel kind of chase each other's tails a lot of times. The big events, I don't think are working. And I don't think the big events are working, you know, like what did we have? We had
Night Terrors.
Oh my. That did not work well.
No.
Joshua Williamson is a solid writer. I don't feel he's an amazing writer. I think he's a solid writer, and he's been doing it for a long time. So I'm happy that he's still in the industry, and I'm happy he's still writing because he can tell solid tales. But he should not have been DC's fall to guy, like or their go-to guy. He should not be the guy that's creating huge crossovers for them. That's not where his strength lies. His strength lies in the small, intimate, sprawling stories that are created around certain characters. And what I mean by intimate is that each character gets their own arc within the sprawling story. So it feels intimate, but it's still a great, long, wonderful tale. You know, things like fables and stuff like that that could be told like that are, in an epic way are important to have. But Night Terrors, yeah, no, not.
It was bad.
Not great. Yeah, I'm going to be on not a great series. We wanted more. We expected more, and we didn't get it. And unfortunately, now you look, the resale value at a lot of those comics, the Night Terror comics, you can't get more than a couple dollars an issue if you're lucky.
No, because I feel like people are. Yeah. And I feel like people that bought the whole thing, don't know who did that. Like, I'm just going to have to sell it for like $20 because like no one wants it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants it, unfortunately. And it's just that the story wasn't there. The art was fine. The art looked cool.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of special covers. And I think that's what sold people. They did those Blacklight responsive covers. And they did a shit ton of variant covers. And a lot of them are really cool variant covers. A lot of cool covers. But variants can only go so far. You know, that's for the art lover. That's for the artist. That's for the fan of the book that also loves the character that's drawn in a particular way. You know, and that's important. But ultimately, with a series like that, it's going to rely upon the story. And if the story is not there, that art isn't going to save it. The story has to save the book. 9.9 times out of 10, it's got to be the story that saves the book. It can't be the art.
Yep.
You can come out with a book tomorrow, Tracy, that's just called Sticky. And it's a bunch of stick figures. And the lead is named Sticky. And as long as the story is great and fun, I'm in. You know, I'll read it.
Yep, exactly.
But if you give me that and the story's terrible, I'm out. You know, I'm not reading that. Like, I'm not buying that, you know. But yeah. If it looks pretty, I'll buy the first issue. And if the story's not there, then I'm done. You know, I've learned my lesson. So you can get that initial bump, that initial high off that one sale and expect more. And then it just crashed because of that exact reason. Yeah. It's all about quality and consistency with collectors. Hmm. And I mean, if you're dealing like in slabs, I think, I don't know about with you, Kevin, but I've seen a significant dip in slab sales.
Yes. Yes. Because the pandemic spoiled collectors in a sense. You realize, wait a second, I can get the same book unslabbed for less money. And some people are also getting traditional again. They want to actually touch the book. Open the book, smell the book. And also CGC has hurt themselves with how much they charge you just to slab and grade your book. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, they were taking advantage. Once when the pandemic hit and everybody was having to buy online, they were buying slabbed primarily because everybody was, a lot of people were new. They weren't graders. They weren't professionals. They didn't want to be taken advantage of. So they thought, well, if I buy it already slabbed, already graded, and this says 3.5, I know the quality that I'm getting is at a 3.5 quality. And then once the pandemic ended and they were able to go to the stores again, they were like, well, now I can see because I have a 3.5 at home. I know what that kind of looks like. So I can gauge and I can just buy it raw for way cheaper. Why the hell wouldn't I do that? So then that's where that shift happened. You started to see a lot of that. And you're 100% correct, Kevin. You know, a lot of that had to do with it. I mean, I love slab books. I do. But like, you know, I also love raw. And if you're going to want to read it or at least look through it, you can't slab it and do that, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Unlike a sports card where you can look at the front and the back and it's graded, that's fine. But when it comes to comics, it's a whole different story.
You know, and it's funny because there's this Crafty Comics is the name of the company, and they created a very unique thing. And I thought this is really well done to where you can self slab your comic. And then what you do is they'll give you a printout, like when you go to buy a particular book or something, and you'll let them know, or you can purchase the stickers online. and you put a little sticker on the back of the book or of the slab that you've done, and you can scan it with your phone, the QR code, and it takes you to a downloadable version of that comic. And I thought that's a great idea. And I'm not sure why CGC and CBCS aren't doing that at this point. It's kind of insane to me because I have in my hand a Brave and the Bold 54. It's the first appearance of the Teen Titans, right? And I'm like, I kind of want to read that, but I can't because it's slabbed, right? So what do? I flip to the back. There's a code on the back. I scan that with my phone and then bloop, I pull it right up on my phone and then I can read it. And then I'm like, oh, cool. So you've recreated something that's collectible for two different reasons. You know, it's collectible because it's preserved, and it's also collectible because, you know, you're able to tell, you like the story and you can read it. So I don't know. Well, maybe we'll see some changes. Maybe we won't. I think as an industry, the large companies need to grow. And I think also Disney and Warner Brothers needs to grow up as well and realize that the audience isn't going to just hang around. They're just not going to be there. They're seeing it in their films and they're seeing it in their comics. You have to tell a good story. If you cannot tell a good story, we're done. Yeah. So the state of the industry rests in the hands of the creators. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it rests in the hands of people that have the money to hire the creators. Spend the money. They're worth it. Find the talent. Scout. Look online. Go to conventions. Read people's indie published things, their independently published or self-published works. Read their little novellas and see if it can get put into or translated into a comic.
Also, price point I think is important too, if I might add.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. I think $3.99 should be the absolute most that you should be charging.
Yeah, remember when DC was drawing the line at $2.99?
Yeah. You need to go back to that. You need to go back to that. Because again, we're in difficult times. A lot of people can't afford $5.99, $6.99, $7.99. It's ridiculous.
Yep. And Todd McFarlane was real smart about it because his books are still $2.99 a piece. And what books do we sell the most of? Spawn. Torch, Gunslinger, King Spawn, all that universe, because people are saying it's self-contained. And they're still only $3 a piece. So if I need to read the next one of the other one or that one, it's still way cheaper than trying to, like Chris was saying, read an X-Men series. So yeah, absolutely. You know, that price point is a big part of it. Anything else anybody wants to mention quickly before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is TikTok culture. And that more people are losing less. They're getting less. Like they pay attention a lot less. Like they have a 3 minute attention span.
Oh yes.
Or 10 seconds, however long TikToks are.
Chris, I'm sorry. Can you repeat what you just said? I wasn't listening.
I said that people have.
I'm kidding.
I thought my microphone was muted for a second there.
Oh yeah. No.
and also because of that, the kids are forgetting how to read.
And exactly. And they're being trained. Issue.
So if there was a way for the comic book world to combat that, so maybe do the comic books, but then do audio book for the text or something. I don't know.
Hmm. You know, they did try that from Marvel, I believe, was a big proponent of this. They tried to put out the digital comic book where it was like, they tried to make each page like actiony. So like the characters would kind of move on the page a little bit, but it wasn't full animation. And then they would tell the story along with it. And it just looked weird and didn't work.
Weird.
Yeah. I think the best thing we have right now, Chris, is that what I was reading when we were in Thailand was the apps that take the page and they show you the scenes of each page and they move it into your peripheral, you know, right into your viewing center. And it creates that action, that dynamic. I think maybe having Warner Brothers in Disney and a few others invest in education and going around and showing these and handing them out. You know, they're giving the app away for free to kids, you know, on their tablets and stuff, so they can you know, view this and doing a book report on a comic book. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I know I use that when I teach Shakespeare. I have graphic novel versions of the Shakespeare plays so that the kids can have more of a visual aid to help them get through it, to understand it and stuff. So I totally get that. What's the name of this app that you're talking about? Do you remember?
Well, okay, so I was using it and then I stopped and then I went to go use it again and they were like, oh, well, we're changing. This app is shutting down and we're going to pivot to a different app. I don't remember what the new one was, but the older one was Overdrive. And I used that in combination with the LA Public Library. So all you'd have to do is just like Google the new Overdrive name is, and then you can download that on your phone or on your tablet or even I think on your desktop. But I think it's a good point that Chris made, and I think education is a good part of that. So I hope that that you guys listening feel somewhat more educated than you did prior. And if you have any pieces of wisdom to educate us with, we would love to hear it. So please respond back in the comments. Reach out to us on our social medias. We have Twitter. We have Instagram. We have Facebook. You can reach us on any of those platforms. You can email us if you want. And you can find us, even our webpage under the production banner, Rumble Spoon Productions, rumblespoon.com. You can go right there and find us. I want to thank you again for Chris, Kevin, and Tracy for being on. And I want to thank you, the audience, for being a part of this. We really appreciate you all. And if we don't see you out about anytime soon, perhaps we'll see you
at the unique, insightful, but always informative Comic Book Shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.